Okay, good evening. Hope everyone is well. Tonight we have the privilege of studying Parshas Emor, and it's quite an important parsha with a lot of messages and a lot of important things to get to. Tonight's learning is Ilu Nishmas Bitzalel ben Yitzchok, as well as Refuah Shleima for Yaakov Yosef ben Fega, as well as Besarich Shar Charli Yisrael, all the many people who need Refuah Shleima for all different types of ailments. As we study tonight Parshas Emor has quite a few themes that for many of us seem to be irrelevant to many of us that are not Kohanim, but the messages and the lessons, as we see, are very much relevant to all of us, and even in our non-Kohanic status. First of all, just a quick overview of Parshas Emor. The beginning of the Parsha, the Torah discusses the rules of the Kohanim, and more than anything, the extra restrictions that the Kohanim have that you don't have by regular Yisraelim. Even though we know that all Jews are holy and we all have restrictions and limitations, there are some specific ones for the whole Shevet Kehuna, even more specific ones for the Kohen Gadol, and that's going to be discussed in this week's Parsha. We also find the idea of the Isser of shaving one's beard, as well as the Isser of cutting oneself over the loss of a passing of a family member or another death. Then we find the rules of a Kohen Gadol that's so unique that a Kohen Gadol is not even allowed to become Tamei to one of his seven relatives. A regular Kohen is permitted to become Tamei to one of the seven relatives, not so a Kohen Gadol. Then the Torah discusses the rules of bringing a carbon, that you're not allowed to bring a carbon that has a physical blemish, nor can a Kohen that has a physical blemish be allowed to work in the Beis HaMikdash, which is an interesting lesson because many of us would have assumed physicality shouldn't be something that HaKadosh Baruch Hu cares about. Why do physical blemishes matter to Hashem? And then the Torah goes on to discuss a very, very important mitzvah, which is the mitzvah of Kiddush Hashem and the violation of Chilul Hashem, which we'll discuss at length. Then in this week's parasha, we find the Yomim Tovim. Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, Sukkot, Pesach, and Shavuos is discussed in this week's parasha. So if you're ever looking to research on the Yom Tovim, you come to Parshas Emor, that is where the bulk of Yom Tovim are discussed, as well as the mitzvah of Sviras HaOmer, where we're holding right now the mitzvah of Usvartam Lachem Belineda. We will try to get to that as well. And what I really want to get to tonight, Be'ikr, if there's time, is to discuss a small story at the end of Parshas Emor, the story of the Mekalel, about a very interesting individual amongst Klal Yisrael, who at the end of the parasha has a run-in, so to say, with another Jew, and has a disagreement with Moshe Rabbeinu's psak, and becomes the Mekalel, makes a curse, curses Hashem, and ultimately gets the death penalty. So if there's time, I hope to discuss that at length. That's a quick overview of what takes place in this week's parasha, some of the main events that you're going to see in this week's parasha. If we can...
What if a person has mental illness? Is that considered a mama?
Depends, Matis. It's complicated. Depends on the situation. Depends on how extreme. But simply speaking, if he's a regular, not a shaita, that would not be a problem. No, presumably not.
Also,
yes, Matis.
Who does a person sit shiva for? Their parents? Brother, sister?
A person sits shiva for the seven relatives, parents, brother, sister, son, daughter, and spouse. We will discuss that more tonight in Mitzvah Hashem. So if you look in the beginning of the parasha, the Torah opens up, Vayomer Hashem al Moshe.
Thank you.
You're welcome, Matis. Vayomer Hashem al Moshe, Hashem says to Moshe, Emor el ha-Kohanim b'nei Aaron. I want you to speak to the Kohanim, the children of Aaron. V'yamarta lehem, you should say to them, Lenefesh, to a soul lo yitamo ba'amov, you're not permitted to become Tamid. So if Moshe Feinstein in the Sefer Darash Moshe points out right away, why the change in Vayomer? If you open up a Chumash and you look wherever there's a commandment passed down, the beginning of the commandment always starts off, Vayidaber Hashem. What's Vayomer? Why the change? Why the usage of the word Amira versus the word Dibor? So Rav Moshe Feinstein explains a very, very important lesson, and he himself writes, this is a lesson for Chinuch. Says Rav Moshe Feinstein, Vayidaber is always Lashon Kashis. Means whenever you hear Vayidaber, you got to know something is coming down, it's going to be tough, and it's going to be hard. Said Rav Moshe, when Moshe Rabbeinu was giving over to Aaron, for future generations, the idea of Kahuna, and the restrictions that it comes with, he didn't want it to come down as hard. He didn't want it to come down as, oh, another restriction, another regulation, another limitation. He wanted it to come down as something light, something nice, something exciting, something enjoyable. And this is an idea I want to develop in this week's parasha. And in this week's parasha, we're really learning an idea and an ideology, how to be from Jews, and how to give over that to our children. And I think, and I would add, even in a time like this, where life is very much topsy-turvy, upside down. Says Rabbi Moshe Feinstein, the lesson of Vayomer was, I don't want you to look at this as a difficult task. I don't want the Kehanim walking away saying, oh my gosh, another thing I can't do, another restriction, another limitation, and now I can't go to a cemetery, and now I can't go to attend this and that. No! Says Rabbi Moshe Feinstein, the lesson of Vayomer means it should be light, kal. It shouldn't be a burden. It should be an inconvenience. It shouldn't be a pain in the neck. And therefore, says Rabbi Moshe Feinstein, that's why HaKadosh Baruch Hu opened up with the Lashon of Vayomer, as opposed to the Lashon of Vayivav, which we find everywhere else, is for the Kehanim and their families to come to the realization, to feel, and to realize that this is not a burden, this is not difficult. Perhaps we find in the opening Rashi, in Parashas Emor, one of the more famous Memre Chazal, Rashi is bothered with the double Lashon. It says in the Parashah, Hashem says to Moshe, say to the Kehanim, Va'amarta alehem, and say to them, what's the double amira? Says Rashi, Amar va'amarta lahazir gedoylim alaktanim. This comes to teach us to warn the adults on the children. This is based in Gemara and Yuvamis. Gemara and Yuvamis tells us that it's an obligation for adults to ensure that children don't do averis. The Gemara says you're not permitted to openly give a child not kosher. I can't go over to a small child and say, well, he's not bar mitzvah yet. He's not a gil chinuch, let him eat cheeseburgers. No, that's not permissible. You're not allowed to give biadai macholos asuras to children, nor, as many people do, people think that on Shabbos, if you don't have a Shabbos goy, so you use your kids. That's absolutely not correct. We added a hatayr halacha share on this, probably years already where we discussed this, that's absolutely not allowed. And especially if you use your own child, you might be in a violation of an issa d'oraisa, as we've spoken about. But your stamazeh, you're not allowed to ask little kids to do malacha for you on Shabbos. You're not allowed to take a child and have him do an iser. That's his din. Of lahazir gedolim alaktanim, we have to warn adults to make sure the ktanim also keep the rules. But over here it's specific. Over here the message is that we have to make sure that little kehanim boys don't go running around in cemeteries. And little kehanim boys don't come tamei to a mace. And this is the source, l'chol ha-Torah kula, in all mitzvahs ha-Torah, that we have an obligation to educate the young and not allow them to be a dime going doing this. So the obvious question is, why did the Torah pick this specific case to drum home the message of to warn the youngsters not to violate? The Torah could have picked it by anything. The Torah could have picked it by Macholos Asuras. The Torah could have picked it by Shabbos. Why did the Torah pick it specifically by coming in Tumah and a Kohen? So Yaakov Weinberg, the Rosh Hashiva of Nei Yisrael, was Rosh Hashiva of Nei Yisrael. He says a beautiful idea. And this is also a very important lesson for chinuch. He says, you know, it's very easy to tell your child you can't do something. Right? It's very easy to tell your child, you know, you can't do that because it's against the Torah. And we Jews don't do that. But he points out, what are you supposed to tell your child when your child's a kohen and he says, I want to go to the cemetery and all my friends are going? Well, you're not allowed to go. But my friends are allowed to go. How do you explain to a child that you're different than the kid next door to you who's just as religious as you are? You guys are in the same yeshiva. You guys are in the same shul. You guys are best friends. Very, very hard to explain to a child how he's different than his neighbor. It's very hard to explain how he's going to be different than the kid who's in his class who can do this and he can't do this. Therefore, he explains over here, you need an extra hazhara. It's much more difficult for parents to train their children when there's something that everyone else is allowed to do, but they can't do. Lahazik gedolim alaktanim. It's much more effort involved in the parents to teach their children that, listen, your neighbor, your best friend, he's a wonderful child, but he has a different set of rules because he's not a kohen and you're a kohen. Rabbi Zalman Sarotskin explains that the two emars over here, the double amira, is you got to tell your children two things. A kohen who has a son has to tell his son, listen, you're not allowed to become tummy. But then if the son knows a little bit, he'll turn to his dad and say, Dad, it doesn't make any sense. Being involved with the dead is such an unbelievable mitzvah. We know what's chesed shalemes, the highest level of chesed, is being involved with burying people. It's one of the greatest mitzvahs a person can do. So the child can say to his father, Dad, why are you restricting me from doing mitzvahs? I want to be
on the Chevra Kedisha. I want to be on the Zaka. I want to be able to help those that need the most help. And you're telling me I can't? So the answer is yes. The Torah is saying as much as you want to be a Baal Chesed, and as much as you want to do Chesed Shalemis, you can't. That's the two Amirs. You have to tell him that yes, it's special. Yes, it's valuable, but I'm sorry, it's not the right job for you. Leave it to those that are allowed to. And then we come to the famous Rav Moshe Feinstein in this week's parasha. Rav Moshe Feinstein echoes this theme many places in the Sefer. Rav Moshe says, I understand the pshat lahazir gedoy lemalaktanim. You have to warn. But what's the two amiras? Who's the two talking? Says Rav Moshe, the first talking is the parents have to understand mitzvahs. And the second emor is the parents have to relay that message to their children. Says Rav Moshe Feinstein, the most important way to relay chinuch to your children is not talk, but live it. You need to be excited about mitzvahs, and then you can give it over to your children. But if it's merely going to be lip service from the parent to the child, it's not going to work. For those of you that are following the news right now, there are quite a few very high-ranking people in different communities that tell you you can't go out to certain places, but yet we have videos and clips of them going to different places. The mayor of Chicago went out a few weeks ago to get her hair done, even though she forbade everyone else to go out to get their hair done. And her answer back was, well, I need my hair done because I am seen by many people and it's very important to me. I don't know about anyone else who heard that, but to me, I have absolutely no respect for such a person. That means your actions speak much louder than your words. And children are so much smarter than regular people. When they hear one thing from their parents and they see something else from their parents, the message they get is confusion and usually disrespect for their parents. Says Rav Moshe Feinstein, if you want to give over the message to your children about what it means to be a kohen and how a kohen is supposed to treat, and more, you need to hear it and you need to live it. When you live it, then you can give it over to them. But if it's just going to be lip service from you to them, it's going to go nowhere. It's a very important idea. Whereas parents, we have, especially now that we're on top of our children literally 24/7, it's very hard to say one thing and then do something else. We're giving them the wrong message. We have to make sure that the message that we're relaying to them is what we feel and what we believe. Because that's the only way it's going to be accepted. And therefore, if you want to give over to your children that you have to act differently, you have to act in a different way than others, you have to make sure the message that's being relayed, that you're living it also. When you're living it, then you can give it over to them in the same venue, and they will accept. How does the Torah open up? Who is restricted to coming in contact with the dead bodies? So the Pasuk tells us, B'nai Aaron, the children of Aaron. So Rashi says, B'nai Aaron, even if you have a mum, if you have a kohen that has a baal mum and he's not allowed to work in the Beis HaMikdash, he's sidelined from the Beis HaMikdash, he still has no right to become tamei to a dead body. So what do you see from here? You see that the ability to work in the Beis HaMikdash is not the deciding factor or what allows a kohen to become tamei, because a baal mum is not going to be working in the Beis HaMikdash. He is on the sidelines. He's on the disabled list. Now, maybe he will fix his mum, maybe he won't, but right now he's not eligible to serve in the Beis HaMikdash. And nonetheless, says Rashi, he's not allowed to become in contact with a dead body. So what about a woman? What about a bas kohen? Would a bas kohen be allowed to become tamei? So Rashi tells us, yes. B'nei Aaron v'loy b'noy Aaron. We know it's Mishnah and Kedushin, the Avchav Test. The Mishnah tells us that a bas kohen is allowed to come into contact with a dead body. There is no such din that a bas kohen is not allowed to. There is a famous shayla, we've discussed this in the past. What happens with an ashes kohen? Let's say you have a woman who's married to a kohen and she's pregnant. Is she allowed to go to a cemetery? Because we're afraid maybe she'll give birth, and if she gives birth in the cemetery and she gives birth to a boy, that boy is not allowed to be in the cemetery. So there's a whole shayla, we discussed this in the past. Now the question is, why taka are women excluded from this din? Why are women allowed to come into contact with dead bodies? So the Baal HaTurim writes, the reason why women are allowed to come into contact with dead bodies is because they caused death to the world. We often know, Chazal tells us, that Chava, with sinning on the Eitz Hadas, caused Misa La'olam. So whenever there's anything to do with death, women always have a different status. So says the Baal HaTurim over here, the reason why women are not subjected to the rules of Tumah is because they brought death to the world. So Reb David Kviat, in his Sefer Sukkas David, explains that why did the Baal HaTurim need this reason? He says, because you would have just said Pashut. The reason why women are not subjected, because they don't work in the Beis HaMikdash. The answer is, says Reb David Kviat, you see it has nothing to do with working in the Beis HaMikdash. What's the proof from a Baal Mum? A Baal Mum doesn't work in the Beis HaMikdash, and still we know that a Baal Mum is not allowed to become Tameh. So what do you see? That's not about working the Beis HaMikdash, it's about having a status, a title. So a Bas Kohen also has a title called Kohen. So maybe she's not allowed to become Tameh. Therefore, we need the Svar of the Baal HaTurim, that the Baal HaTurim tells us that the reason why she's not allowed to become she's allowed to become Tameh is because, whatever that means, that women caused Misa into the world. The Dubna Magid points out, why is it that Kohanim are not allowed to become Tameh to regular Jewish people? Why is that? Very strange. We mentioned earlier that being involved with the dead is a great schus, it's a big mitzvah, it's called Chesed Shalemes. Why are they being restricted from such a beautiful mitzvah? So the Dubna Magid explains that the Gemara tells us in Brachas that there are different ways for people to be motivated to do tshuva. The last way to be motivated, the lowest level, is to be skewered into tshuva. How is a person skewered into tshuva? The Gemara says, Yema Misa. Person sees death, he hears of death, it usually scares him to come back to do tshuva. But says the Dubna Magid, that's for the rest of us. The rest of us, the only way we'll be skewered back into, skewered straight, is if we see death. So therefore the Torah says, yeah, go, you be involved with the dead, you bury bodies, this will scare you back to life. However, says the Dubna Magid, Kehanim don't need that scare tactic. The Kehanim will do tshuva on their own. They're on a different level. They're on a different madrega. Therefore, says the Dubna Magid, for them, they don't need the scare tactic. Therefore, if they don't need the scare tactic, says the Dubna Magid, there is no reason for them to have to become involved with the dead, and therefore they have a prohibition of becoming Tamei to other than the seven relatives. And we all know it's very true. If anyone's ever been to a Levaya, you know you come back from the Levaya for at least a day, you're pretty shaken up. You see a body going to the ground. It has a reshim on you. It definitely means something to you.
If a woman brought death into the world, then she shouldn't be Tamei Lameis.
I'm not sure.
She shouldn't be Tamei Lameis.
Yeah, I don't know exactly what the Svar of the Baal HaTurim is, Matis. I don't really understand it fully. I'm just quoting what he says. It needs further explanation. Yeah, I'm not sure. I hear what you're saying. But it's true. We all know it's true. You see a Levaya firsthand, you're shaken to the core. So therefore, says the Dubna Magid, the Kehanim didn't need that. And therefore, they're not permitted to become Tamei Lameis. However, the Torah does tell us that the Kehanim are allowed to become Tamei. To whom? Ki im l'she'eroi, ha'karoi ve'ilof. To the she'eroi that are close to them. Who are they allowed to become Tamei to? Mom, dad, son, daughter, ulachiv, and to their brother and sister, depending on her status. So we know that they are allowed to become Tamei to relatives. So ask the Kliyoka why they're allowed to become Tamei to relatives. And it's a beautiful Kliyoka. Kliyoka explains that the reason why they're allowed to become Tamei to relatives is, he says, because why is the Kohen now allowed to become Tamei to a dead body? So he says, because a dead body means that the Malach HaMavis came and injected Tumah into it. When the Malach HaMavis comes to take a person's life, when he takes that person's life, the Malach HaMavis comes and injects Tumah into the body. Then if you come and touch that, you're coming in contact with Tumah. However, says the Kliyaka, but Kehanim, they don't die like that. They die with what we call a Misa Nishika. They don't die with the Malach HaMavis coming. And therefore, since they don't have that, that's why they don't have that Tumah. And that's all Kehanim, all from the family of the Kahuna. So the Kliyaka asks, if that's the case, so I should be allowed to become Tameh to my neighbor, who's also a Kohen, because we're from the same DNA. He says, no, that we don't permit. But for the immediate family, says the Kliyakar, is because Kehanim die differently than Yisraelim and Levim. Kehanim die in a way where there's no Malach HaMavis. It's a Misa Nishika. And therefore, there's no Malach HaMavis. Based on this, we can understand why many people have a tzad that Tamidei Chachamim are not mitame. There's no Tumas oil by a tzaddik or by a big godel. Why? Because we assume they died in Misa Nishika. If they died in Misa Nishika and there's no Malach HaMavis, then they don't become Tam. That's the Kliyakar's explanation. Who is the first person the Torah mentions that a Kohen is allowed to become Tamei to? So the first person the Torah mentions, the Torah tells us he's allowed to become Tamei to his She'era. Who's his She'era? So Rashi says, She'era ain She'era eli ishtoi. A She'era means his wife. So it's interesting, of the list of people the Kohen is allowed to become Tamei to, who's first on the list? His wife. His wife is not a blood relative. His wife is not even the DNA of a Kohen. His sister is, and his mother might be, depending. But she's not, his wife is definitely not. Why is she first on the list? Secondly, why does the Torah call her a She'era? Shouldn't the Torah have called her Ishtoi? Ki'im le'ishtoi. He's allowed to become Tamei to his wife. So the simple answer to why you're allowed to become tummy to your wife even though she's not blood is because we have a rule, ishtei kigufa. We say it all over, ishtei kigufa, man and wife are one entity, so therefore it's mutter. But there's another beautiful kliyaka over here, worthwhile to read it inside. I'm not going to, but I urge you all to read it inside, especially if you want to ever need to speak at an event. It's a beautiful, beautiful piece to bring home the importance of roles in a relationship between a husband and a wife. And the Kliyakar explains that, do you know why the husband is allowed to become a tamid to his wife? Says the Kliyakar, because the wife is the one who supports him. She feeds him. She takes care of his sustenance. She makes sure he has what to eat. She makes sure he's well fed. And he says, Val kein ishto kigufa damye. That's why she's kigufa damye. She's gonna light up his eyes. She's gonna be the one who takes care of his needs. That's why it's befitting that he's metamed to her. Important lesson. Important lesson of why the Torah allows you to become tummy to your wife is not because there's blood here. Why is ishtei kigufa? You know why husband and wife are one? Because they think of each other as one. I help you and I give to you, and it's a reversal relationship. I give to you and you give to me. That makes us like one. That's why you only find this relationship of ishtei kigufa by a husband and wife. You don't find it anywhere else. Because this is the relationship that part of the relationship is the giving and taking. I have responsibilities to my wife has responsibilities to me. Those forced responsibilities by the Torah or by Chazal enhance our relationship. They don't diminish the relationship. So ask the Kliyakar, what about the when I go to the restaurant and they have to bring me food also, so I'm allowed to become a tamid to them? Says the Kliyaka, no. A she'era is a special relationship you have with your wife. And I would add, because the intimacy that is expressed when one serves their spouse is a different type of experience when you go to a restaurant. We know in Hilchas Nida, one of the major eras in Hilchas Nida that restrict husband and wife during Nidus is how they serve each other food. Why? Because serving a spouse food is not merely, oh, here's the food, take it. It's an intimacy, it's a relationship, it's a closeness. That you don't have with the waiter in the restaurant. That you don't have with anyone else except for a spouse. So therefore says the Kliyaka beautifully that the reason why a husband is allowed to become tamid to his wife, even though she's not pedigree kahuna. And I would add, maybe this is why she's first on the list. To bring out this very, very important idea. That the reason why you're allowed to become tamid to her is because she takes care of you. And you have a very intimate relationship because you both give to each other. You give to her and in return she gives to you. And that's what creates the ishtoi kegufai type of experience. Then the Torah goes on to tell us that who the kohen's allowed to marry. The Torah says that the kohen's allowed to become metamet to his relatives, only his immediate relatives. Then the Torah tells us about who he's allowed to marry. Limitations on marriage. A regular Yisrael can marry anyone he wants as long as she's Jewish. When it comes to a kohen, there's restrictions. What does the Torah tell us? Isha zayna v'chalala lo yikachu. He's not permitted to marry a zayna and a chalala. V'isha grusha me'isha lo yikachu. He's also not permitted to marry a divorcee. Ki kadosh hu lelekav, because he is holy to Hashem. So the Torah restricts a kohen from marrying a grusha. Yet we know a kohen is permitted to marry an almana. He's allowed to marry a woman who was previously married and her husband passed away. But he's not permitted to marry a woman who was married and got divorced. So what's the difference? I understand a Kohen Gadol is not allowed to marry anyone that was ever previously married. And Belineda tonight will shed some light on that as well. But the discrepancy by a Kohen is somewhat unique. It's okay for him to marry a woman who's previously married. But it depends how her husband died. Was he killed? Or did he die? Or did they just the relationship not work out? If it was a divorce, says the Torah, no, you can't marry a divorced woman. It sounds like from the Torah, Chas V'Shalom, that there's something wrong with a divorced woman. That's obviously not the Torah's ideology, that there's something wrong with her because her relationship didn't work out. But yet an almana whose husband died, that's okay. What's going on over here? How do we understand this? So I thought this was an interesting chiddush. I'm not attempting to understand it more than the words relay, and I'll just say it over. Reb Zalman Sirotskin in his Sefer Aznayim LaTorah gives two pshatim. I think each one is more controversial than the next, but I'm going to just mention it because I find it interesting. His first pshat is the following. He says, we know kohanim have to be on a higher level of kedusha. So he says, you know what we're afraid of if the kohen marries a divorced woman? We're afraid that maybe when he's living with his wife, she'll be thinking about her ex. And although that doesn't actually make the children puzzle if she conceives from that relationship, but it's not the same kedusha as if she was thinking about her husband now. So we're afraid if we allow her to marry a divorced woman, she might have thoughts of her first husband. Okay, I whatever. We'll leave it at that. Okay, that's the svara of Rabbi Zalman Sarutzky. His second svara is because he says if you look in Chumash, the Torah says that when a woman gets divorced, it does say the word tumah. It says that it says acharei ashehu tamah. She moves on to another man after she became tummy. So it says Rabbi Zalman Sarutzky, although we know it's not real tumah, and we all know that a divorced woman is not contaminated, chas v'shalom, but he says that when it comes to a kayin, he's on a higher level, and therefore he's not permitted to marry a divorced woman. Whatever the svara satir is, this has been one of the halachas that has been held up to the end of time and forever, that everyone knows that a kayin is not permitted to marry a divorced woman. I share with you a very famous story that is related to this idea over this halacha. There was a couple in Eretz Yisrael that were married for quite some time and they were unable to have children. And they were getting close to the 10-year mark and they decided that if something doesn't change, they're going to separate, they're going to divorce because each of them on their own wanted to have children. And together they're not zaycha to have children. And finally, as that 10-year mark came, they decided, okay, we're going to have to do what we don't want to do. We're going to get divorced. And they got divorced. Few months after they got divorced, she realized and she found out that she was actually pregnant. She found out she was pregnant. Now they're in big trouble. Now why are they in so much big trouble? Why can't they get remarried? The answer is because he was a kohen. And we know a kohen is not permitted to marry a divorced woman no matter what. So this fellow went to every Rav, every Dayan, every Pesach, every Gadol, everyone. And they tried to come up with some heter. There's got to be some tshuva somewhere, abstract tshuva that has a tanai, some condition, and they nothing. The Torah is the Torah. It says Mefurash in the Pasuk, V'yishag v'shom, me'yishal la'yikachu. Even if it's your own divorcee, we know the Gemara says. And this couple was obviously very, very depressed over this news. They waited so long to have a baby, and now she's pregnant, and now they can't even be married. So, what does anyone do when they reached the point that they think there's no answer? They go to the Kaisel to daven. So this man is sitting at the Kaisel, he's pouring out his heart, he's crying like he's never cried before. And a fellow comes over to him and says, I see you're obviously very saddened, something is wrong, is there a way I can help you? And the man says, I am beyond help. I am way beyond help, there's nothing anyone can do to help. I went to every Rav, every Gadol, every Pesach, there's nothing you can do. He says, you want to tell me what's going on? He says, why? What are you going to do? He says, maybe I can help. So he tells him the whole story. And the elderly man turns to this boy, this young fellow, and tells him, why don't you tell your parents? So at that time, he didn't want to tell his parents because he didn't want to bring them more agmas nefesh. He never told his parents. He split up from his wife. But the fellow suggested, why don't you go tell your parents? So he said, okay. He goes in and tells his parents what happened. And his parents said, we have to tell you something also. You're not really a kain. We adopted you. Now again, this is not halakhically correct, as we've spoken about in other shirim, but this is the way the story goes. We never told you that you're not really a kohen. We always made believe, because the father was a kohen, we want everyone to believe you're a kohen, but you're not really a kohen, and ultimately they were able to get back married, and they had this child. But again, that story is just the idea that this halacha does stick, and it's, as far as I know, no legitimate kula will allow a kohen to be able to marry a divorced woman. Then the Torah continues, and the Torah says, "V'kidashtoi, you should make him holy." That there's a mitzvah deraisa, according to many paiskim, that we have a mitzvah deraisa to show extra kedusha, extra covet and respect to kehanim. Rashi quotes in the Chumash over here, like Rashi, "Noig ba kedusha." We have to show extra kedusha, extra special treatment to the kehanim. Liftoich Risha Michaldavi, he goes first for everything. He gets the first aliyah, he gets the bench, everything, the kohen goes first. So there's actually a Ramah in Simon Kuf Chav Ches. The last Ramah in Hilchas Nesias Kapayim, the beginning of Chedek Beis in the Mishnah Berurah, where the Ramah says that this is true even Bizman Azeh. Today, you are not allowed to use a kohen to do things. He calls it Moyel Behektish. You're not permitted to use a kohen to do things. Unless the kohen is Moichel. And many people have a handyman, a plumber, he's a kohen. You're not allowed to use him. Says the Ramah, but if he's Michael, it's okay. The Mishnah Berurah explains that why does Mechila help? Because the whole reason why you have to show respect to him is if it's for his benefit. But if he'd rather you not respect him and he'd rather clean out your gutter or fix your toilet because that's his job, so then the Mishnah Berurah says, then it's mutter. But the Mishnah Berurah does quote a Taz, where the Taz says it's not the kohen's covet to be Michael. You have no right to be Michael, it's not yours. What happened over here? Adina. What happened? You have no right to be moichelit. What happened over here? Are we still on?
Still the host, but not ask if they can hear you.
Okay, are we still here, everyone? What happened over here?
Yeah, I hear
you. Okay, I'm sorry. I don't know what happened over there. So the Taz quotes a shita that says no, that you can't be moichel your covet because it's not your covet. You were born kahuna, you have no right to be moichel. And the Mishnah Berurah Taka writes, V'yesh machmirim. The Mishnah Berurah writes, there are people that are machmir, and they try not to use a kohen unless they need to, or the kohen insists, or it's for parnasa, because it's not so posh, even bizman hazeh, that you're allowed to use a kohen for whatever you want. It's a big shaila. Maybe we'll talk about this one day, halach lemaisa, about how to go around using kohanim. If you have neighbors, you ask your neighbor, could you do me a favor, could you come over and help me with something? If your neighbor happens to be a kohen, it's not so posh that that's permissible. I'm going to share with you a story that I read, which just brings out this halacha. There was a fellow who was working in one of the camps during the Holocaust. His name was Mr. Margolis. And he was a veteran of the camps. He was there for almost 5 years. And he knew the ins and outs of camp survival. And he actually was lucky enough to have a position where he did certain jobs for the Nazis. They needed him, and he was considered an essential worker. When he saw one of the new transports that came into the camp from Hungary, which is right towards the end of the war, 1944, he saw a young Chassidish boy get off the transport, and he knew this boy is not going to survive in the regular camp. So he told this boy, you know what, come work for me. Told him, you come work for me. I'm going to put you over here to work for me. And this way you'll survive the war being as my assistant. You'll work for me. So, for quite some time, the two of them worked together, and he worked as an assistant towards this Mr. Margolis, and everything was manageable as best as it could be during the Holocaust. As there, Mr. Margolis is talking to this yid, they're having a conversation, they're talking, and they realize that this boy, is really a kohen. So Mr. Margolis said to himself, he said to himself that I can't have you work for me anymore.
It's a way of sending a message, though, Tim, I think. Maybe to chat.
He said, I can no longer work for you because...
We lost the whole story.
Oh, we lost the whole story. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, let me start again. Adina, we keep on losing it. Do you want to set it up on the laptop, please?
Yeah.
I'm sorry, I don't know why we keep on losing connection tonight. Want to set up on the laptop, please? Okay, we're going to try again the story. I'm hooking up now on the laptop. Apparently the iPad is not a schooler for successful share tonight. But we were discussing a story. Is everyone hear me? Okay.
Yes.
We were discussing a story where there was a Mr. Margolis during the Holocaust, where he was in charge of one of the departments in the camps, and when he saw a young Chassidish boy come in one of the transports, he knew that this boy was not exactly going to survive the hardships of the camp, and he decided to take him under his wing and make him his assistant, so to say, have him work for him in a more secure environment, and by doing so, hopefully ensure that he survives. And this was going on for some time, and this Mr. Margolis was enjoying the camaraderie of having another nice, good, frum boy around him. And they were talking one day, and this Chassidish boy told Mr. Margolis, I have to let you know, I'm a kohen. Came up in conversation, he's a kohen. So Mr. Margolis said to himself, what, you're a kohen? You can't work for me anymore. You're a kohen, the kidashtoi. Now obviously, just from a halachic standpoint, the assumption would be is that there would be mechila over here because the boy would want this to survive, but this Mr. Margolis was machmir. He did not want to accept the kula that we just saw from the Mr. Brura. And he said to himself, thank you, Adin. And he said, okay, hopefully this should be much better. And he said that,
No, over to 100. Go to 100. And he said, okay, hopefully we should be good now. And he said that I am not going to have you work for me if you're a Kohen. I'm not going to have you work for me, but I'm not going to have you killed either. So this Mr. Margolis did double work. He worked for himself and he did his assistant's job as well. So his assistant would not have to be, well, he shouldn't have to compromise on the din of Vikidashtoi. Years later, this boy grew up to be quite a big Talmud Chacham. He was a Mechaber Svarim, and he ended up many years finding this Mr. Margolis, thanking him, giving him a sefer, and they met many years after the Holocaust. But just to show you what one yid in the most difficult of time was machmir for the din of Vikidashtoi, based in this week's parasha, to be careful how he treats a kohen. Reb Chaim Kanievsky in his sefer on Chumash clears the following shaila. Is the din of Vikidashta true even after the Kohen dies? Let's say, for example, in Nebuch now, these shailos can actually come up. Let's say you have a bunch of bodies to bury, and you want to know, should the Kohen be buried first? Does the din of Vikidashta extend to after death also? Or does the din of Vikidashta stop once the person is no longer alive? So Chaim Kanievsky thinks that the din of Vikidashta does not extend after death. And he says the only time kibbutz extends after death is only by a parent, because we have a special drasha. But for a regular person, assumes Reb Chaim Kanievsky that there is no din of Vikidashtoi after he dies. So just something to keep in mind, how the kahuna, even bezman hazeh, when we don't have matnas kahuna, the din Vikidashtoi still applies, and we still have to be careful with how we treat our kohanim. Right after that, the Torah tells us, what happens if you have the daughter of a kohen, a bas ish kohen ki sechal is nois, if you have the daughter of a kohen that will be mezaneh. She profaned her father. She's an embarrassment to her father. But she will be burned in fire. So again, this is another difficult subject to discuss. You know, who's to be blamed when kids do things wrong? Do we blame the parents? Do we blame the society? Do we blame the children? Very, very complicated question. But David Kviat in his Sefer points out something which is interesting. He says, I don't understand. Why is it that the father is the one who was mechalal? What about the mother? Well, mother doesn't have anything to do with this aveira. So he says, because the mother is squeaky clean. We know she has to be squeaky clean. Because it says in the Torah that a kohen is not allowed to marry an isha zayna v'chalala. She has no problems. She must have been a wonderful Beis Yaakov girl. So who is the mistake in? Where was the flaw? He said the flaw must have been in the father. The father must have been the rotten apple, which was then ultimately passed down to the mother, to the daughter, which is, explains why she had misbehaving tendencies. So explains Reb David Kviat. Obviously, that's a very loaded statement beyond tonight's discussion. And then the Torah teaches us about a Kohen Gadol, a whole new level of Kedusha, the Kohen Gadol. And the Torah says it's V'ha Kohen HaGadol, the Kohen Gadol. And the Balaturim writes, the extra hay teaches us that the Kohen Gadol has to be superior than his regular Kohanim in five ways. He has to be Noi, has to be better looking than them. I don't know who judges that, but he has to be better looking. Bikayach, he has to be stronger than the other Kehanim. Be'oisher, has to be wealthier than the other Kehanim. Bechachma, he has to be smarter than the other Kehanim. U'bishanim, and he has to be older than the other Kehanim. So writes the Baal HaTurim. And many of the Mefarshim point out that this is not Ma'akiv. As we know throughout history, there must have been younger Kohanim Gedolim in the world. Definitely by Sheni, we had quite a few corrupt Kohanim Gedolim. But the five things, says the Baal HaTurim, they have to have. Now, all these five Midas, to many of us, sound like funny Midas. How good looking he is. Who cares how good looking he is? His job is not to win the beauty pageant. Who cares how strong he is? Who cares how wealthy he is? Why do any of these things matter? And the answer is because the Kohen Gadol really represents gadlus, greatness. He had to have a certain stature. He had to have a certain appearance to him. He had to have a certain, we'll call it stoltz to him, because he represented something so much bigger. There's a story with the Chafetz Chaim. The Chafetz Chaim lived very, very meagerly. Anyone knows anything about the Chafetz Chaim's house? He was dirt poor, very, very poor. And one time the Chafetz Chaim and his Rebbetzin were traveling, and they went to see Reb Chaim Moizer, the great Gadol Ador Reb Chaim Moizer. And they come into Reb Chaim Moizer's house, and he sits them down, and he gives them tea. And the Chafetz Chaim's wife turns to the Chafetz Chaim and says, I have a question for you. Now, we live in poverty. Our house is nothing but nothing. But look at the Gadol Ador, look how nice his house is. So you see, it's okay to have nice things. So she asked her husband, the Chafetz Chaim, why is it that our house looks so disheveled, so poor, and his house looks pretty nice? If it's okay for him, it should be okay for us.
So the Chafetz Chaim turned to his wife and told his wife, you have to understand there's a difference. Chaim Moiser is the Poisek Hador. He's the Gadol Hador. People from all over the world turn to him for Shilas. He needs to be a certain level. He has to look a certain way. He has to have a certain shtolz to him. He has to be a certain niceness to his home. But we were simple people. We're regular folk. We don't need nice this and we don't need nice that. That was the answer the Chafetz Chaim gave to his wife. And you should know, in the Rebbe's circles, it's very much like that. If you ever see the Rebbe's, they have a certain amount of, everything's put very nicely, they have things very put together. It's a certain melucha. It's almost like you're a melech. You have to look a certain way. You have to give off a certain impression. You have to have a certain shtoltz. Again, not a gaiva the shtoltz, but you're representing Klal Yisrael. If you represent Klal Yisrael, you have to look a certain way. And therefore, said the Chafetz Chaim, that's why. And he based it on this idea that the Kohen Gadol had to have a certain look to him. He couldn't just been any guy under the sun. He had to have a certain milus that made him superior, so to say, from the other Kohanim amongst him. What's unique about the Kohen Gadol is the Kohen Gadol may not become Tomei to anyone. Not his wife, and not his brother, and not even his parents. Which is remarkable, because we know that the Chiv Kibud Aveim exists even after death. And now you're telling me he's not allowed to even be Metamei to his parents? But there's one person he's allowed to become Tomei to, a Meis Mitzvah. A Kohen Gadol can't become Tomei to his father, to his mother, to his wife, but a Meis Mitzvah is allowed to become Tomei to. So what do we see from here? We see how important a Meis Mitzvah is. A Meis Mitzvah is one body that no one's taking care of. You have to be so careful with it. Says Rav Volbi, if you have to be that careful with one dead body, how careful do you have to be with a live body? Everyone talks about, oh, Meis Mitzvah. And what about a person who's a Chai Mitzvah? What about a person who's alive and is forgotten about? And no one checks on and no one cares about? And no one gives any time to? That doesn't count. People only count after they're dead? Says Rav Volbi, if a Kohen Gadol is allowed to become Tomei to a Meis Mitzvah, the message is that a dead body that no one is taking care of is very valuable. Kol Shekein, a live body that no one is taking care of, or a person that seems to have been missed by people, or under the radar, needs our attention as well. So, many people have a basic kasha. If a Kohen Gadol is not allowed to become Tomei to anyone, how is Aaron allowed to be involved in Moshe Rabbeinu's burial? We know the Pasuk says that Moshe Rabbeinu was buried by Aaron. But Aaron is a Kohen Gadol. How is the Kohen Gadol allowed to become Tomei? So the Marsha writes, because Moshe Rabbeinu's death was so secret, his burial is so secret, and no one knows where it is, so who was going to bury him? No one. Because if anyone would bury him, they know where it is. So Moshe Rabbeinu was like a Meis Mitzvah. So Aaron HaKohen was allowed to be Metamei to him because he had a din of a Meis Mitzvah. The Kotzke Rebbe said that the reason why Kohen Gadol is not allowed to become Metamei to his relative is because the Kohen Gadol looked at all of Klal Yisrael the same way he looked at his relatives. They're all the same to him. Most of us have a love for Klal Yisrael, but we love our family more. That's what human tendency is. You love your family more than you love outsiders. We love all Jews. We're supposed to love all Jews. We're supposed to feel all Jews are our brother. But at the end of the day, the love that we have for our family is usually going to be greater than the love we have for regular outside Jews. However, said the Kotzke Rebbe, not so for a Kohen Gadol. A Kohen Gadol had such a deep love for Klal Yisrael. To him, his brother and his neighbor were all the same. So there was no discrepancy about who he's allowed to become Tomei to. Because to him, his father and his neighbor and the guy down the block were all the same level of closeness. And therefore, the Torah prohibits him to become Tomei to all of them. Who is a Kohen Gadol not allowed to marry? So we already mentioned a Kohen Hedget is not allowed to marry a Gerusha, but he's allowed to marry a widowed woman. However, when it comes to the Kohen Gadol, he's not even allowed to marry a widowed woman. He's prohibited from marrying even a widow woman. He can only marry a basula, a woman that was never married before. So the question is why? Why is the Torah more strict with the Kohen Gadol that he can't marry a widowed woman? So many years ago, I've been giving for a while before I moved to Kew Garden Hills. I used to say a chumash here in Kew Gardens, in a shul in Kew Gardens. My uncle's shul, Rabbi Sakalov's shul in Kew Gardens. I used to give a chumash here downstairs. And every year when I came to Parshas Emor, and I always brought up this question, there was one yid, Nebuch passed away from this virus. Many of you may have heard of his name. His name was Hai Arbisfeld. The reason why you've heard of him is because he gave a lot of money to produce the Why You On The Go, those booklets that come out usually before Yom Tif that discuss different topics about Yom Tif from Yeshiva University. He paid for, I think, a lot of it. And he just passed away in the beginning of this virus. He passed away. So whenever I used to come to this parasha, he always used to tell me the same vart, and I still remember it. I always used to throw out this question to the shir. I said, why is it that a Kohen Gadol is not allowed to marry a woman who is even widowed? So he always told me the following pshat. He said, because And this should be, I guess, an aliyah for his neshama. And he said the reason is because a Kohen Gadol, when he goes lefnei lefnim on Yom Kippur, has the ability to cause people to die. If he's mad at someone, he can have an effect that that man will drop dead from a heart attack. So he says, what's going to happen if you have a nice couple that's married, and the Kohen Gadol sees that he likes this girl? He thinks she's pretty, he thinks she's a good catch for him, whatever it is. So he's going to daven that the husband should drop dead. So therefore, he said, that's why we can't have the Kohen Gadol marrying a woman who was previously married, because you never know. And we're afraid that maybe he will somehow be able to affect the status of the husband. That was the word he always used to tell me. And I used to tell him my pshat. I used to tell him, I think the pshat is different. And I think I once heard this pshat from my older brother, who's a Rebbe today in Eretz Yisrael. He told me the following pshat. He says, you have to realize, the Kohen Gadol had a very different lifestyle than everyone else in the world. And this is my own addition. It's Mefurash Rambam. If you look in the Rambam, in Hilchos Klei HaMikdash, the Rambam writes that there was a little building, there was a little room off in the Beis HaMikdash that was designated for the Kohen Gadol. That's where he used to hang out. And the Rambam writes he barely went home. He basically was locked in his office all day, and he went home a little bit at night to sleep, and he kamat never left Yerushalayim. So it's not easy being married to the Kohen Gadol. You can imagine if your husband doesn't come home that often, it's probably very hard to be married to him. So if you have a lady that was previously married, she always remembers what it was like to be married to regular people. So her entire life, she's comparing her first marriage to her second marriage. She keeps on saying to her husband, you're never home. My first husband was always home at 5 o'clock. You're always in the Beis HaMikdash. You're never around. So that's perhaps why the Kohen Gadol can't marry a woman that had a previous relationship, because it's never going to be able to match up to what she's used to. It's impossible. The Kohen Gadol's job was so taxing, it always required him to be in the Beis HaMikdash. He basically didn't have time to spend at home. I always tell over this vort to people, and they talk about, you know, different spouses you're going to marry. You have to remember, it's a whole different lifestyle, right? You marry people with different professions, it's a different lifestyle. Maybe different what you grew up with. Maybe when you grew up, your father was always home more than someone who's going to be out more. And it's different, it's hard to compare it to. So if the Kohen Gadol had to marry someone who was b'chlal, not at all experienced marriage, doesn't know what it means husbands to come or not to be, and therefore she would be able to have a relationship with someone like the Kohen Gadol who was very rarely at home. Rev Shimshon Pinkus points out something which is very relevant to the world we're living in right now. He asks the question, he says, why would the Torah require the Kohen Gadol to be secluded? We know when we're limited to one place, we go crazy. Right? We're all right now very, very, very past the level of cabin fever. We've all been secluded and we've all been stuck, so to say, in our homes for quite some time now. We're really climbing the walls. So how could the Torah demand that Kohen Gadol stay in the base and make this all day, only go home at night? It's not healthy. So Shimshon Pinkus points out, he says, the reason why we have a desire to leave and to go out is because we want to see the world. We want to see the world from the left to the right. He says, based on the Gemara Chagiga, it's a longer pshat, but I'm not going to get into it for now. But he says, if you have a desire not to go left to right, but you have a desire to go up, meaning spiritual growth, higher in Kedusha, then it's okay for you to be stuck in one place. The reason why we don't want to be stuck in one place is because we want to see the width of the world. Because there's two ways. You can go that way, sideways. You can also go up and down. Up and down means I want to grow in Kedusha. Says Rav Shimshon Pinkus, for the Kohen Gadol to be locked in the Beis HaMikdash was not a painful experience. To him, it was great. I can do more Kedusha, more spirituality, more growth. That's how he looked at being secluded in the Beis HaMikdash. While for the rest of us, being secluded in one area means I want to get out there. I want to see the world. I want to travel. I want to go shopping. For other people, no, I'm very happy. This gives me the chance. And again, I'm not saying this is not a bad idea to keep in mind as we are still in isolation over here. Keep in mind, yes, as much as I want to go out and shop and live a normal life, but you know, now that I'm stuck home, I get to learn a little bit more. I get to chab another shir. I get to learn another few minutes because I am locked at home and I have nowhere to go. So instead of looking at that, I want to go out and I want to see, I want to experience, say, listen, I want to be here and I want to grow up. I want to go up spiritually. I want to grow. I want to gain new heights and new levels. Then we'll just skip a little bit in the parasha where the Torah discusses, we're going to jump a little bit because we're short on time. The Torah discusses the carbon toida. The Torah says that a person brings perik chav beis, pasuk chav tes, v'chi says b'chu zevach toida l'Hashem, when a person will bring a carbon toida to Hashem, l'tzarnechem tiz b'chu, the Torah says he can eat it that day, he's not allowed to leave it over, because ani Hashem. Okay. What follows this idea of the carbon toida? Says the Torah, "Shmartem va mitzvos, I keep my mitzvos, va asisem oisam, and do them, cause ani Hashem." That all makes sense. Veloy sechalu es shem kodshi, do not profane my name, chil Hashem. V'niktashti b'seich b'nei Yisrael. And not only that, make a Kiddush Hashem. Ask Reb Chaim Kanievsky, why did the Torah choose to write about Chilul Hashem and Kiddush Hashem following the Korban Todah? Right after we talked about the Korban Todah, now is the place to discuss Kiddush Hashem. Why is it this way in the Pasuk? Reb Chaim Kanievsky explains, because what's the Korban Todah reflect? The Korban Todah is Abot Tzrichim Lohoidos. Four people that experience something that requires them to say thank you. Says Reb Chaim Kanievsky, when a person experiences something that requires them to say thank you, what we call today Hakaras HaToiv, and he doesn't, that's the biggest Chilul Hashem. When a person was given a gift or a special situation, or HaKadosh Baruch Hu showed him a special kindness and he allowed something good to happen to you, a person was sick and Baruch Hashem he got healed, a person traveled in a dangerous area and Baruch Hashem he wasn't affected, that's a Korban Todah, says Reb Chaim Kanievsky, and you don't, that's the biggest Chilul Hashem. When a person can't realize the good that was given to him, the kindness that HaKadosh Baruch Hu showered him with, that's V'loi Chalul. That's a Chilul Hashem. A person needs to be able to express Zakaras HaToiv. Many of us have so much to be proud for, even in the midst of all this craziness. So many of us went through difficult times. Many of us were sick. Many of us know people who were sick. Many of us have what to be Makir Toiv to. Baruch Hashem, we have, whatever it may be. We have, whether it's our job, whether it's our family, whether it's our health, we have what to be proud of. And if we continue with the attitude of negativity, it's not good enough, I want more, it's a Chilul Hashem. Says Reb Chaim Kanievsky, we need to appreciate what we have and be makir toiv and say, thank you, Kadosh Baruch Hu. I'm happy what I do have. I'm happy that I have this and I have that. I have my health and Baruch Hashem, I have a place to sleep and I have a place to eat. And I have family who cares about me and friends who worry about me. I'm so grateful, Kadosh Baruch Hu. And therefore, that would not create a violation of Chilul Hashem. Why does the Torah introduce Chilul Hashem with the intro that it does? Before it tells me don't make a Chilul Hashem, it says, Ushmarte mitzvosai, guard my mitzvos, vasisem mitzvosam, and keep them. Says the Mefarshim, because usually Chilul Hashem is the more you know, the bigger potential you have to make a Chilul Hashem. But everyone knows that the more Jewish you look, and the more religious you look, it gives off a much more negative perception of religion. If someone is a frumer yid, and he looks like a frumer yid, and he dresses like a frumer yid, and he is a frumer yid, the potential for Chilul Hashem is much larger. A person is not shomer Torah mitzvah, so no one thinks much of him. They don't even know he's Jewish. They don't even think he's Jewish. They don't even know what he is. But if you look like a yid, you're walking with a big yarmulke, and you have a beard, a big payas, and then you're going to create a Chilul Hashem, it's going to be much more of a responsibility on you. You're going to be held much more accountable for that. Because what you're doing is a complete Chilul Hashem, and we expect more from you. We expect more from you because you're giving off, you look, you are. You're a frum yid. A frum yid has to make sure he's not giving off the impression of a Chilul Hashem. But all the Mefarshim are bothered with the following question. What's the double talk? Don't do a Chilul Hashem and make a Kiddush Hashem. Why the double? Why both? So I saw a beautiful pshat and it's so relevant to the world we live in today. So many times people think what they're doing is a Kiddush Hashem. From a cheshbonis. They're doing wonderful things. They're going to have an illegal minion during coronavirus. They're going to open up a base matters during coronavirus. Kedusha! Hashem, we need to say Kaddish! We need to say Baruch Hu! But lo yisechalu, it's a big Chilul Hashem. You think you're doing Kedusha? Absolutely not, it's the reverse. Not only is it not Kedusha, it's a horrific Chilul Hashem. I was saying to people this last week that many people are now getting, this week the weather was much nicer. So people were out and about. Shabbos was beautiful, everyone was out and about. And then a lot of people were out and about without masks and without social distancing. I said, forget all the medical issues. It's a terrible Chilul Hashem. As it is in the news, we already have problems in other communities where the from Yidden are not practicing the official policy of the city and the rules. We don't need more Chilul Hashem. We don't need any more Chilul Hashem. It's not worth it. But we have people today that come with a from a cheshbon. I'm going to have a minion because I need that. I want a minion. And I'm going to have yeshivas open because I need to do it. It's a from a cheshbon. It's not about the... It's from. So the Torah, yeah, that's usually when a Chilul Hashem happens. When people try to make from a cheshbonis, and people try to do things that they think are l'shem shemayim, that very often can come out a very, very horrific Chilul Hashem. It backfires. But Reb Nissen Alpert asks a basic grammar question on this pasuk. Ask Reb Nissen Alpert, how does the pasuk read? V'lo yisechalu es shem kodshi, you should not profane my name. V'niktashti, V'nikdashti doesn't mean you should make me holy. It means v'nikdashti means that I will be holy. I will be niskadesh. Ask Reb Nissen Alpert, why doesn't the Torah say, and make me holy? Says Reb Nissen Alpert, you can't force someone to make a Kiddush Hashem. So what can you do? He says, if you live a lifestyle of Torah and mitzvahs, you will then be able naturally to be able to be Mekadesh Shem Shemayim. If I tell you, now go to Mekadesh, you can't do that. You don't know what to do. You don't know how to do it. But if you live a lifestyle, says Reb Nissen Alpert, of Torah and mitzvahs, where you're being educated, you're training your body, you're training your life, you're changing your actions to be a life of Torah, then you can bring about Kedusha. Then you can lead to a point of Kedusha. Then the Kedusha will come out. But to force a person to Kedusha, that's impossible. Many Rishonim write this way. That how are you misakin Chil Hashem? Sometimes we make a Chil Hashem, we don't mean to. You cut someone off on the road, you didn't mean to be a bad person, but you're sitting with a big yarmulke, it's a Chil Hashem. How can we be misakin Chil Hashem? Says Rabbeinu Bachaya, by making a Kiddush Hashem. Doing something to bring Kvod Shemayim into the world. That's how we can fix a Chil Hashem. If a person accidentally felt that he might have embarrassed, profaned HaKadosh Baruch Hu's glory in this world, so be Mekadosh Shem Shemayim. Do something that brings in HaKadosh Baruch Hu's glory. Go out of your way to be kind to someone. Do a kind act. Show respect. Do something that can bring back HaKadosh Baruch Hu's glory. That's a kiyum of Kiddush Hashem. It's Mesakin Chil Hashem. The Chofetz Chaim writes Lahalocha that speaking Lashon Hara is a Chil Hashem. An interesting psak from the Chofetz Chaim in the Sefer Shmiras HaLashon. He writes that speaking Lashon Hara is a violation of Chil Hashem. So besides for all the other wrong reasons, all the other chesroinus in speaking Lashon Hara, all the many averis, and how the Chofetz Halvavos tells us that all your mitzvahs go to him and all your averis go to him, go to you, said the Chofetz Chaim, it's a Chil Hashem. It's also a Chil Hashem. No one needs any more Chil Hashem. Therefore, we should try to be careful in our Lashon Hara as well. Then the Torah continues and it discusses the mitzvah of Sviras HaOmer. The mitzvah we're holding in right now. We have a mitzvah to count the Omer. That's what we're doing right now. We've spoken about this in the past in the Halacha Shurim, this famous Machoikish Mishainim. Is Sviras HaOmer mitzvah derabonim bizman hazeh, being that there's no carbon Omer, or Sviras HaOmer still a mitzvah deraisa bizman hazeh. So the Aruch HaShulchan writes that the counting of the Omer is really to Kabbalah HaTorah. What are we counting to? We're counting down to the day where we have Kabbalah HaTorah. We have Kabbalah HaTorah every single year. Every year on Shavuos, whether we'll be in our shul or we won't be in our shul, hopefully we will be, who knows. But we're going to have a new Kabbalah HaTorah. We're counting down to that new Kabbalah HaTorah. Every night when we count the Svira, we're getting closer and closer to the Torah. But as many Mefarshim point out, we're not ready to get the Torah yet. Because when we left Mitzrayim, we weren't ready. We weren't a kli kibol for the Torah. And that's why the Karban Omer was brought of barley, which is food for an animal. We got to get rid of our animalistic attitudes. We need to get rid of the animal in us. The animal that doesn't think logically. The animal that doesn't have proper etiquette. The animal that just acts like an animal. We got to get rid of that. We got to rid our body of that part of our element if we want to be able to be mekabel the Torah in a few weeks. The Aruch Haim HaKadosh writes that the 7 weeks correspond to the 7 clean days. We know when a lady wants to become Tahar, after Nida, she has to go through 7 clean days, Zayin Nikim, and then she's allowed to go to the mikvah and be with her husband. Says the Aruch Haim HaKadosh, we don't need days, we need weeks before we can be one with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We're so behind. We have so much to fix, to improve, to be misakin, so we can get the Torah in a proper way. We need 7 weeks. But we have to remember, we're using these weeks to build our character, to make us, that we can have a proper Kabbalah HaTorah when we come to the Yom Tov of Shavuos. What's interesting is right after the Torah discusses the Yom Tov of Shavuos, the Torah like takes a break. And it tells us that, you know, when you're harvesting in your field, don't harvest everything. You should leave a little bit for the poor people. The leket kitzir chaloysa laket. Laniva laket tazayvay. Some leave some for those who don't have. Asks the Meshech Chacham of Meir Simcha of Divinsk, why now? Why is the Torah telling me here about Matnas Aniyim? Says the Meshech Chacham, because we just came off of the Yom Tov of Shavuos. The Yom Tov of Shavuos was the Torah. The Torah teaches us ethics. The Torah teaches us how to deal with the poor. The Torah teaches us how to deal with those less fortunate. Everything comes from the Torah. The Torah navigates our life. The Torah navigates how we think. The Torah navigates who we feel bad for, who we show compassion to. It all comes from the Torah. Because we live in a world today where people have an abundance of compassion, but they're always compassionate for the wrong people. They're compassionate for those that are anti-Eretz Yisrael. They're compassionate for those who want to destroy Am Yisrael. They're compassionate for all the wrong people. It's beautiful. They're compassionate. But their rachmanis comes from the wrong place. Our rachmanis comes from the Torah. We feel bad for who the Torah tells us to feel bad for. La'ani, v'la'ger. Those people that the Torah says to feel bad for. We don't feel bad for Amalek. We annihilate Amalek. Where's our rachmanis? Because our rachmanis is defined by the Torah. Hashem tells us who to have compassion for. We feel bad for the Ani, we feel bad for the Ger. We feel bad for the Yasam, we feel bad for the Almana. We don't feel bad for Amalek. That's the way the Torah tells us. Therefore, says Ramesh HaChachmo, the Torah is teaching us who and how to show compassion and who to feel bad for and how to act upon that. And then at the end of the... And then right after that, shortly after that, the Torah goes to the Mayadim. And then the Torah tells us about the Shemen used in the Menorah. And then the Torah tells us about the Lechem Aponim. So the Mefarshim point out that the order of the Torah is important for a lesson in life. What is the Menorah and then the Lechem Aponim? We know the Menorah represents Torah. We know the Lechem Aponim represents sustenance. It represents our mezainis. It represents our physical needs in this world, what we live by. We'll call it Parnassah. Says the Mefarshim, what's the order of the Torah? What comes first? The Menorah, which is the Torah. A person has to put his Torah before his Parnassah. Yes, we all need to work. We have to have jobs. We have to go to college to get those jobs. But what is our focal point? First comes the Torah, then comes our job. Not the reverse. It's not, well, my job is the most important thing in my life, and then comes the Torah. No, it's backwards. The most important thing in my life is Torah. And I wish I could learn more, but I have a job. So the hours I have to be at work, I go to work. And the hours I have to be in school to get that job, I go to school. It's a Mishnah Novus, Perkei Avos. Asei Torah keva. What does it mean to make your Torah keva? Doesn't mean you're going to learn 24-7. You can't always learn 24-7. Most of us are not lucky enough to learn 24-7. You know what it means? It means what's the most important thing in my life? What's the keva? What's the established value in my life? It's the Torah. Everything else around it is secondary. But Torah, it doesn't budge. That's what the Torah is hinting to us over here. The menorah comes first. A person needs to have the menorah. He has to have the Torah. And then after that, no, of course, you have to have a job, and you have to have a parnasa, and you have to have education. That's secondary. That's after a person realizes his Torah is his most important. And this takes us now to the topic I really wanted to get to tonight. This was really an intro to Parshas Emor. What I really wanted to study tonight with everyone was the story of the Mekalo. An unbelievable story where the Torah tells us about a fellow, perhaps today he'd be called a troubled youth. I don't even know how young he was, but he was troubled. He clearly had some issues. He was frustrated, angry. And he does something which was unheard of at the time. He curses HaKadosh Baruch Hu with Mekalo Hashem. But when the Torah describes this fellow, the Torah tells us, what was this guy's issue? What was his beef, so to say? So Rashi quotes three pshatim. And one of the pshatim Rashi says that the Mekalo was bothered by something in Judaism. He had a question. His question was the Lechem Aponim. That was the parasha right before the story. He said, I don't understand. We put this bread down every week, Friday to Friday, and then the Kohanim eat it at the end of the week. You're going to give the Kohanim stale bread? A chutzpah. We just spent the last hour discussing about how special our Kohanim are, and you give them week old bread? What's the deal? Don't they deserve better? And he was troubled by this. It bothered him. He was so angry by this, it led him to be Mekalel Shem Shamayim. So the question is, what exactly was so troubling to him? What was bothering him? Says Reb Zalman Sarotsky, you know what the mistake of this fellow was? If he would have waited till the end of the week. If he would have waited and he saw when they took the bread off of the Lechem Aponim, how fresh it was, and how it smelled, and how wonderful it was, he wouldn't be all upset. But he jumped the gun. He right away got so fatayned, so fakashed, all caught up, and he couldn't see the answer. How many times in life do we get so caught up, we get all upset, and if we would just wait it out, we'd see how it all makes sense. But we live in the right now, the immediate. We can't look down the road. If this guy would have waited a week till they took the bread off the Lechem Aponim, and he'd say, wow, look at that, it's a miracle. But he was so close-minded. He only saw the right now. He only saw what he calls logic. And I'll be logic, bread doesn't last more than a week. But if we open our eyes and open to the idea that there are miracles that happen in the world around us, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu knows what he's doing, and even though I don't understand it, it's okay, we don't get so upset. Says Ibn Sarasqan, this was a colossal error on his part. The mistake that he made over here was he jumped the gun. So many times in life, if we just wait a little bit, see how it plays out. I don't understand this, HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It doesn't make sense to me, but it's okay. You have a plan. I'll sit back and I'll watch to see how this ends. If he only would have done that, he wouldn't have led himself to the point of Mekalo. But there's another Medrash. The Medrash says that the mistake of the Mekalo was he didn't believe in Din V'Cheshbon. He didn't believe that everything he does is going to be held accountable. He didn't believe in the afterworld. He thought you could do whatever you want in this world, and whatever will be, will be. Asks Reb Hanoch Leibowitz, how can he think that? This guy, this Mekalo, lived through Yetzias Mitzrayim, lived through Kriyas Yamsov, lived through Machamas Amalek. How can he not? So Reb Hanoch Leibowitz tells a very important lesson in life. We need to realize there's some certain basic fundamentals of Judaism that sometimes are overlooked. Din v'cheshbon is overlooked. How many of us don't think about the fact that every act that we do, we're going to be held accountable for? Every little thing that we do, we're going to be held accountable for. We believe it, we know it, but we don't think about it. Yeah, we learn Torah, and then we learn Lomdis, and we learn Reb Kiv Eger's and Ketzais HaChoshen, everything. But how many times do we forget the fact that there's a din v'cheshbon? That for every little thing I did or didn't do, said or didn't say, I'm going to be held accountable? Basic fundamentals in Yiddishkeit. This Mekala lost that basic fundamental in Yiddishkeit. The Talmud Rebbe explains that the mistake of the Mekala, this is very drushy, but it's a message for life. The Talmud Rebbe explains that the mistake of the Mekala was, what Mekala wanted to do was, he wanted to say to the world that the Lechem, which we call our Mezainis, we call our Parnassah, doesn't really come from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Hashem is not really involved in your daily life. You're involved in your daily life. You're a smart guy, you go to work, you make big deals, you make big investments. It's all you. HaKadosh Baruch Hu's not really involved in it. This is a horrific message for the Jewish people. For the Jewish people to think for a second that HaKadosh Baruch Hu's not involved in their parnasa, he's not involved in their daily life, is a terrible thing. And that's why the Mekalo was a danger to society. He was such a hazardous ideology for the people to think that HaKadosh Baruch Hu's not involved in their life, in their parnasa, in their mizoinis, in their living, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu's detached, would be a terrible, terrible experience, and therefore the Mekalo needed to go. Oh, there's so much more to talk about, but I don't want to hold everyone captive for so long. It's been quite some time already together. I'm just going to leave off with one last vart. There's more to talk about. We'll leave off with this vart from the Meshech Chachma. After the Mekalo gets his death sentence, he gets killed, and the Torah ends off. The Jewish people stoned him, Kasha Tziva Hashem es Moshe, like Hashem commanded Moshe. Says the Meshech Chachma, when the Jewish people stoned this Mekalo, they did not do it because they hated him. They did not do it because they wanted to knock off one more Jew, and they didn't do it because they wanted his parking spot. They did it because it was a tzivay me'es Hashem. They did it like they put on tefillin in the morning. Hashem said so. Not out of anger, not out of animosity, not out of jealousy, nothing. There was no bad blood at all. It was mamish kashet tzivay Hashem es Moshe. They did it like any other mitzvah in the Torah. And it's a madrega to be able to do that. It's not a simple thing. We all have natural tendencies, we all have emotions, that when we see our friend going through a difficult time, many of us get a chuckle. Geschmack! Look at him, he's suffering. No, absolutely not. That was not the case over here. The Mekalo had to be put to death because that's what Hashem wanted. But at no point was there any benefit or did we enjoy seeing it. I think Nebuchadnezzar, when we see people around us that's suffering, but that's what Kosh Baruch Hu wants, but at no point should we enjoy it. Say, Ataka. He deserves it. He's been having life too good for a while. He hurt me last week. I'm happy that bad things happened to him. Chas v'shalom. We have to say to ourselves that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is doing whatever he's doing, but at no point am I enjoying his suffering. At no point am I gaining from his suffering. And I'll add one more word in this plenet will wrap up. The Torah tells us about the Mekalo, that there was another person in the story. There was another Jew. There was the Mekalo with another Jew. And they got into a fight. But the Torah doesn't even tell us the name of the other person. Says the Kli Yakar because he doesn't deserve to have his name written in the Torah. Because fighting never ends well. And people who fight, who get into disagreements with people, don't get their name mentioned in the Torah. Says the Kli Yakar, and that's why right after the story of the Mekalo, the Torah reminds us that you're not allowed to hit people. Do you know why, says the Kli Yakar? Because fights lead to people hitting people. Fights lead to people hurting people. Fights never go anywhere good. Therefore, says the Kli Yakar, the Torah doesn't even mention his name. The person who disagreed, who got into a fight with the Mekalo, says the Kli Yakar is part of the problem. He was the instigator. He raced them on. Says the Kli Yakar, it's a beautiful Kli Yakar, I urge you all to read it at the end of the parasha. Fights never end well. We're living in a time now between Pesach, between during the Yimei HaSvira, where the Gemara tells us, Meisu Talmidei Rabbi Akiva Shlo Nagu Kavod Zeh LeZeh. I don't believe that the Rabbi Akiva students were mean to each other. They probably disagreed with each other. Akifi Erech on their Madrega was held accountable. Fights never go anywhere good. You fight with your neighbor, you fight with your spouse, you fight with your sibling, it never ends well. People get hurt physically, emotionally. The Torah is reminding us in this week's parasha that people that are involved in Machlokes are not people that we want to praise. We don't praise those who fight. We praise those that are Oyev Shalom, those who seek to make peace, those who are willing to give up, willing to be Mevater. And at the time right now where we're holding now during Avos, we all have to work on this. We have to find and look back in our life to limit the amount of arguments we have, with whether it be with our neighbor, co-worker, parents, for sure, spouses. We need to limit the amount of machloikis, because the Torah reminds us in this week's parasha, machloikis never ends well. Mr. Hashem, we should all appreciate those around us, appreciate what we do have, and we should only grow, become closer to each other, and not, chas v'shalom, distance ourselves from each other. Have a wonderful evening, reminding everyone to count Svira, and have a wonderful night. Don't forget to daven Ma'ariv and count Svira.